Hey y'all, welcome back to the Brianna Approved podcast. We have an OG Brianna homie for life favorite on the podcast today, the one and only Rob Cruz, who is the founder and CEO of Complete Game, a player development company, which we will get into. Mm-hmm. Rob is not only the CEO of Complete Game, but he is also an esteemed author of not one, but two books, Complete Game and Swag 101, which talks about improving in-game focus and confidence. He has also consulted for many softball programs everywhere from UCLA to Stanford, and he's been a contributing writer for publications like Fast Pitch Softball Magazine, and he's basically just one of the best guys I know. So, Rob, thanks for coming on the podcast. How are you? Since we were just chatting, we haven't seen each other in who knows how long, a decade?
It's been a long time. It's been a decade. Oh, my God. Long. That's too long.
I don't know how to describe you except for being a great person who's just full of passion and you're so dedicated to what you do, but you also, I don't know if it's because you live in New Jersey, so you're just like, you keep it real and you're to the point and you're no bullshit and we love that around here. But if you had to describe to somebody who you are, like what you do, what Complete Game is, we were in an elevator for less than 40 seconds. What would be your elevator pitch of like, hey, I'm Rob.
It would be hard to put it into words what I do. And I always struggle with that because I do so many things, aspects to what I do. And then there's so many different ways where it changes. You know, it always changes. So some parts of the year I'm this, some parts of the year I'm that. But I would probably say I'm in player development. Keep it simple.
So how did Complete Game come to be? Because so for the listeners who don't know, Rob and I met many moons ago at a facility in White Plains. I was working with baseball players at the time, but you specialize, I believe, in softball players, but maybe baseball. So I'd imagine maybe your background is in baseball. Like, just how did Complete Game come to fruition? And how did you get to being an author and, you know, doing these programs and traveling all over helping people?
That's a good question. And I get that question a lot. So years ago, There was a softball club team called the Hudson River Bandits out of White Plains, New York. And we had just opened up a facility. And in fact, it was like one of the first indoor facilities, because we were sitting there thinking, are people going to come here? Are people going to pay to learn how to hit? No one's ever really done it, at least not on this scale. Oh boy, what if no one comes? You know what I mean? So we got all the stuff. We had all the stuff. We had baseballs. We had this. We didn't even have softballs. So it was a 10 and under team and a 12 and under team that nobody else wanted to work with because they were softball players. Nobody wanted to do it. So I said, okay, I'll do it. I did it. We worked. I mean, I trained them the same way I would train baseball players. And then next thing I know, they were like second in the nation. I didn't realize it was softball was that big of a deal until I started going out a little bit later on and seeing how huge it was. I was like, wow, this is crazy. It's crazier than baseball. I thought baseball was crazy. This thing is crazy.
I don't know if you know, I'm from Toms River. So we are like, you know, known as the Little League champions of the world back in the day. Shout out Todd Frazier. So baseball and softball was a core foundation of everybody in this area, at least.
So Toms River is a huge, huge staple in youth baseball and softball, still is to this day, because the culture never graduates, the culture never leaves, it just continues, right? So and then South Jersey, which is I think Toms River is considered South Jersey, right?
Central.
Central?
Okay. There's debate about it, but we say Central.
All right, so yeah, they're still doing it. I mean, they're still doing it. They represent.
So I feel like when we met again, I mean, this was back in, I want to say 2011, 2012. So a few moons ago. And I feel like now there's been this resurgence of everybody's a coach and an expert and their social media and everything's online now and videos, but you were really ahead of your time for doing that. And I think for being, you know, really hands-on as well. And so I think player development, probably this idea and this concept has evolved a lot over the past few years. Mm-hmm. When you talk about this idea of player development, mental strength, these kinds of things, what are some areas that you either notice really move the needle for athletes or things that maybe you were doing ahead of the time before it was cool and trending and all over social media?
That's a good one. Ooh. So years ago, right, when I first broke in, it wasn't really a profession. You really couldn't earn a living doing it. You know what I mean? You had to really, really put a lot of hours in to do that. And when I did it at a time when biomechanics was something that was not popular. And when you said the word biomechanics, the so-called experts laughed at you. Mm-hmm. Biomechanics, ha, ha, ha. Just see it and hit it. Just hit, you know, Babe Ruth just saw it and hit it, like whatever. But, you know, biomechanics was coming. And we, you know, the facility that I was affiliated with at the time, we prided ourselves in knowing what we were talking about. Like science, the science of hitting, which, you know, you got science of hitting, which is what we kind of have to teach. And then you have the art of hitting, which is kind of what we can get away with teaching. And the art part, you know, because our base was biomechanics, you know, the art part only came from your experience as a player, what you did, and then your experience in teaching and what worked, what didn't work, and just accumulating as many students as possible so you can see all the possibilities and all the ways you can go with athletes. In terms of the player development term, now that term is becoming kind of overused. So obviously I got to get away from that term now because I don't want to be in the same bowl of soup as those other people. So now it's really human development.
Ooh,
I find that I got to really, one of my gifts is being able to tap into the human side or the person, because it's ultimately the person that has to show up. And they show up as who they really are. They show up as who they really are. And sometimes I have an opportunity to mentor certain people who allow me to mentor them, and I can help shape and mold how they see themselves. Especially in a world where females and the female athlete are kind of undervalued. It's important for me to build confidence. You know, I build confidence on one, excellence, and probably two, accountability.
Yes, excellence and accountability. You know, I love that you said human development, because this is why I've always loved personally playing sports my whole life, but working with athletes, it's a different caliber of person because I remember even when I used to train athletes, I'd always say you're, you know, a person first and an athlete second, but there are always going to be, I think, certain discrepancies that are going to coexist together. Mm-hmm. Any athlete that I know, an athlete that is excelling, they usually are excelling in other areas of their life. They're quite disciplined. I see that there's a level of obsessiveness, maybe perfectionism, things that aren't always great with a ripple effect, but they can be helpful. I think there's this sort of forceful diligence, if you will. And I think that there are a lot of things that sports can teach you on the field that you can take into real life, which is why I love athletes. I love studying elite athletes, all that kind of stuff, talking to people like you. Do you think that there's anything that you've either seen over the years or you personally have learned from sports, a lesson, sort of themes, things like that, that can be translated or transferred into the quote real world that maybe help elevate a person personally, professionally, athletically?
Yeah, I think you said a lot right there. So, and I think sports is a generalization, because the same way that if someone says Division I, that's also a generalization, because for me it's winning programs. Because I think when I look at the players that I've known who have been a part of winning programs that are continually winning and have power are led by coaches that kind of know how to win. Winners. People say winners win, right? And even families, like families can be winning families. You know, and I think looking at those programs that create a winning culture, those young women that go into those programs are recruited to those programs because they see some kind of winning, they have attributes of and value systems that are core values that a winner would possess, even in high school. They look at the families and say, wow, you know, your parents have they're winners.
What are some of those core values that you've seen personally over the years?
Work ethic. Obviously, in work ethic, you see how you'll watch how a player will excel. Commitment level. So, to what extent have you? To what extent will you go to become great? Will you get a trainer? Will you get a speed coach? Will you get a nutritionist? Like, will you do all the things that you that winners do to always try to find an edge? Will you go travel to go here to play, or you just kind of have you got one foot in and you're not willing to go? And but there are also financial boundaries for certain people that okay, I can't do all those things. I would, but even those kids find a way.
No, definitely.
I mean, we got YouTube. I mean, we got all these resources. If we can't find a way to pay for it, we'll find a way to figure it out. But that's what winners do. Winners figure it out.
Oh, I love that. Winners figure it out. We got to put that on some of your new swag. I know you have the no ground balls swag, yeah, but I think you need to put winners figure it out on
they
your
do.
Next swag line.
They do.
That's something I love that you brought that up, because I remember when I used to work with a lot of the younger athletes, I would have this conversation about, yeah, everybody's kind of good now, especially I think when you're younger and then before you get to college, it's like, yeah, you were the best on your high school team. Great. That's awesome. You need to have that. When you get to a college level or higher, everybody, you are no longer like, you know, you're like a little minnow now in this big pond, right? Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. I think there is a difference between athletes who are good and they're doing the bare minimum. Maybe they're doing even a little bit more than the bare minimum. They have some natural ability. But then there's the longevity of sports and things that make a good athlete great. And if you want this to be your career, or even if it's just collegiate for 4+ years, there's going to have to be some differences. And I think now a big part of it, and you have always been very ahead of the time of speaking about this, is the idea of improving mental strength and what that means. And I think we live in a weird time now because there's a lot of pressure on athletes. And so it's like mental health is taking this weird sort of turn, but also I think, yes, there's only so much you can physically do with the body until your mind has to be strong. So if you could give advice to somebody who's maybe struggling with that piece of their athletic career or life career, human experience, to sort of elevate that mental game, or, you know, what were maybe things that either you did younger to work on that, or things that somebody could start doing now to be like, yeah, I'm going to work on my mental strength and this is the blueprint I can follow.
I don't know if my parents knew what they were doing, but it's the kitchen table talk. When you're 7, 8, 9, it's the accountability and the discipline that's instilled in you as a young person that really contributes to what level of mental resilience you're going to have. Like, you ever notice how it's always the younger sibling?
Me, yes.
Right, because you got picked on by your brothers, your sisters, and your cousins. They made you tough. You had no choice. You had to be tough.
Yes.
You couldn't go tell mom, they're picking up. You had to be tough. So when you got old enough, you beat them. That's just what it is.
Yes.
I think environment, how you, you know, the environment and the situation that you were raised in, adversity, going through adversity, I think it contributes to the level of resilience that an athlete or a person can have. You see somebody, you ever watch somebody and you see somebody really successful? If you ever read a biography of anyone, just pick any biography of anybody successful. When you read that person's bio, you will see why they're successful. You'd be like, they went through that? Holy smoke. I don't know if I can go through that.
Yes.
But I think that plays a big part in how resilient someone can be emotionally, confidence, the ability to bounce back, the ability to see something as that's not pressure. You mentioned the word pressure. Pressure is something that we make up in our own minds. Because for some people, they need the moment. They need the big moment. And being able to find those athletes is a certain skill within yourself. And I believe that the smarter coaches in the college world, they just know how to recruit mindset. They know how to find mindset. They know what questions to ask. They know how to identify that's mindset. I need that person in my program. Not talent necessarily by itself. Because talent by itself is still powered by mental strength. But if you can recruit mindset along with talent, you got something special. And if you have the ability and that gift to do that as a recruiter or whatever, that takes something special. That's something special.
How much of mindset do you think is inherent and set in us, and how much is malleable in the sense of I can work on this if I'm willing and I want to? Because, you know, I know I've worked with people over the years too, where they have the raw talent, but they're like, yeah, no, I know it. That was actually kind of my philosophy in high school. I was like, yeah, I'm really good. What are you going to do? Bench me? Obviously you're going to. So looking back, I was very cocky and not, and I always joke with my dad. I'm like, if I ever applied any of the, you know, mental acuity that I have now, I could have probably got along further in field hockey and whatnot. So being older now, you know, looking back, so how much of that do you see of maybe there's some defiance of like, yeah, no, I don't need to, I'm really good, versus this person's got potential. And if we get this mindset right, we could really take them to the next level.
I think for me, it's funny, I used to always wonder to myself, can we be, and if we can, to what extent can we help our young athletes shift from being, because coddle culture is a real thing.
Yes.
And coddle culture is what really creates a particular mindset. And I always tell my kids, it's so easy to be really good right now because you're competing against all people that are mentally and emotionally inferior to you. It's easy to be really good. I feel like years ago, there were more good elite players because you had to be.
Yeah.
Because you get cut. People actually cut people. People actually got cut. Kids don't even understand what cuts are. So this is like a whole nother. And the thing is with this particular generation of athletes, I have to look at them as who they are. But I also have to have some foresight to be able to say, okay, this is you now. Growth mindset. This is where I see your future self. And you don't see it. I have enough experience to actually see where you're going to be 3 years, 4 years. Now, can you bet on yourself? Are you willing to? Do you have the confidence? Your parents have bet on you because they're spending the money to back it up, right?
Totally.
But can you bet on yourself? That's the issue that we're all waiting for. So for me to be able to have that level of influence, I don't take it lightly. I pride myself in being really good at mentoring mindset, fostering mindset, creating an environment in my training culture that challenges mindset. That I try to create more opportunities in training where it's what I call random training versus block training in sports psychology. You probably heard of it. And then I also try to create emotional context of a game so that they get used to the idea of in training challenges, in training competition, and get them to feel that there's a consequence for not getting it done in this particular situation, even in practice.
Consequences are important.
Absolutely. And
I feel like Absolutely. We, to your point, living in this coddle culture of, mm-hmm. yeah, back in the day, you didn't make the cut and you had to try harder next year. And I guess there's probably, some benefits to the inclusivity part of things, but I feel like it's ultimately a detriment, you know, overall for the athlete. So I guess, where did you get all of your sagacious wisdom from? Is it that sitting at the table with your mom mindset, is it from sports? Is it just life? I mean, how does somebody get to the point of where you're at, where you can kind of look at somebody and be like, yeah, this person's got it, this person doesn't have it? Where, you know, how does that skill develop?
My parents are freaking amazing. And I lived in a situation where you accountability was everything. Discipline was everything. If my mom said I was on punishment for 2 months, it's 2 months. It's not you. It's a month and you're off. It's 2 months. My yes. sentences were real.
Yeah. No, I always joke. I'm still afraid of my mom. I'm 34 and I'm still afraid of my mom. So.
Me too. I do not mess with that woman. So that made me the way I am. I think we all who we are. And I sometimes look at myself. I'm like, oh, God, I'm just like them.
So what about somebody though who doesn't have, because I think you and I are similar in that sense, that's probably why we get along on some level too, of having that that really solid foundation. And when you grow up like that, you kind of think it's normal and you're like, yeah, everybody has this. And they really don't. As you get older, you see that. I remember when I went to college the first week, I called my dad every day with a new eye-opening moment, being like, Dad, did you know people do X, Y, Z? Or Dad, did you know people don't have this kind of conversation? I was shocked. I was befuddled on so many levels. So what could somebody do who's maybe they're getting to that age where they're like, yeah, I want to be more serious about this. My friends are kind of, you know, you're the average of the five people you hang out with. I'm not loving this. My environment's not great. I don't really feel like my parents understand me. Where can they go? What can they start doing? Maybe whether that's on their own or with a coach, or, you know, what would point them in the right direction to get, you know, access to that kind of stuff?
I think, I believe in therapy. I believe in life coaches. And I was just lucky. I mean, I played for really good coaches. Not necessarily like good coaches that were like good, but they were just good people. So I always, but I always understood that's right, that's wrong. I want to take those attributes from this person, but those attributes from that person, I don't want to take. Like, I always had a good sense of what was right and wrong. And I was fortunate enough to make some mistakes, but also make some good choices as well, in terms of how I wanted to be and how I wanted my life to be, you know. And I always worked. I always found a way to I was always, and I think some people work, it's funny because I was analyzing myself and I was talking to a team recently, and I said to them, I said, you know, I really, really worked really hard, but I probably did it for the wrong reasons. I probably worked hard because I was afraid to not be good. So I was working hard out of fear a lot of times, because I was so afraid that I wouldn't be good enough, which is a thing. And when I looked at myself, I was like, wow, I wonder how many other people are doing the same thing.
Oh, I think fear is a like, huge driver.
I'm taking 2 weeks off because I'm that good. I can take 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
And I could have. This is not going to make me, what I'm going to suck because I took 2 weeks off. Then I already sucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, you know, yeah.
No, it's funny that you bring up the coachability thing, because I just had this revolution with my brother. I had this in-depth conversation with him about this idea of, I have finally realized that I actually don't think that anything in life is truly that difficult outside of being a brain surgeon. There's obviously going to always be outliers, right? But if you really want to do anything in this culture, to our point earlier, it really is just about dedication, persistence, right? So committing to something, and repetition. And most people just don't want to do the work. And so I always joke, I'm like the outsource queen. I'm like, if I can just outsource it to somebody else, right? If I don't want to do it myself, which to your point is then hire a coach, get a mentor, get somebody who has put in the 10,000 hours, quote, to make them an expert, because that's what we're all trying to do to bypass the time of, okay, then how can I bypass this repetition process, which you ultimately can't, right? Like, but I think everything in life is figure outable and learnable on some level if you're willing to do the work. But so then how important is it to be coachable, or how can you even assess to yourself, like, am I in a place, or how could I say to myself, like, you know what, maybe I do need to be more open to coaching, even though I think I know everything, or I have it all figured out. Cause I'm sure when you're really good at things, sometimes you're like, what? Why would I need a coach? Like, who could benefit from a coach or a mentor?
So what I'm finding, and this is really, I just recently got to this place where loving yourself, knowing yourself are paramount to be able to express yourself. And so many kids are struggling with love/acceptance of who they really are. And I have to be tough, because that's the kind of coach that I am. But I also know that there's levels of how tough I need to be with certain people. Like, for some people, I might be on a 3. Some people might be on a 7. For some people, I'm like, I don't even really talk to them that much. I just let them do their own thing. So me being able to discern the individual needs of each athlete in a team environment, that's a spiritual gift. That's a whole different other level of just kind of knowing how to work with people. But the love piece, I try to connect people with different people. So I have a mental skills coach that I refer people to, who I trust, who's very, very good. I have people like you that I refer people to, you know, that are very, very good at what they do that I trust. I have a network of different types of different people that are good at different types of things. And I try to match my players up with the personalities of those people, because I know you need that energy.
Yes. I love that you said that. That is so important, because people think that you can go to one person and they know everything. And I think the best people in their field say, this is not my expertise, and I'm going to defer this to somebody else. And I think, to your point, that's what I loved about watching the docuseries on the Bulls and Phil Jackson. And he really knew how to meet each player where they were. You can't coach everybody the same. I like to be yelled at. I like tough love. That was my dad on the sidelines being like, move your ass, when there were other moms being like, go, honey, go. And I would just, if my dad was late to a game and he wasn't there yelling at me, I wasn't doing good. And that's what I needed. I'm like that now. I recently started playing tennis and taking lessons, and like, I need to be a little bit of tough love. For some people, my other friend who's doing it, she would burst out into tears. So to your point, it's, I think, yeah, knowing what kind of coach you need, and also being able to be honest and be like, if you are the coach or the person in charge, being like, it's not my skill set, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I try to have different people that do the same thing that match. So even this, like when players ask me about colleges and stuff, like, hey, you know, I'm looking at the school, and I'm like, and me knowing who the head coach is and knowing this player, I'm like, okay, so here's what's going to happen. If you don't change, you'll never make it at that school with that coach there, because she will not have it. So here's some other schools. You know what I'm saying?
Here's your backup.
I happen to know her on a personal level, or him or whatever. I'm like, you cannot. Can you play at that level? Yes. Can you play for him or her? Currently? No, unless you change.
No, I think that's I think that's transferable to a lot of disciplinaries. Mm-hmm. I say this to people, it's whether you're working with a nutritionist, a sports coach, a therapist, mm-hmm. it's like any relationship, there has to be compatibility on some level of feeling seen and understood, and this person gets what I'm trying to do, and mm-hmm. I feel comfortable, to your point. I think that, like, self-love and all of that. So I think that's a great piece of advice.
That lends to coachability. That speaks to how people show up every day, you know. And for some of the players who I know are going to play at a really high level, our conversations are different. There's more required of you. Mm. You're playing on ESPN almost every weekend. Like, you're always on a plane. You're doing final exams in a hotel room.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like you're going to community college around the corner, where it's a little bit less expected of you.
Yeah.
So in order for you to understand what that takes, like, you have to understand punctuality. You have to understand manners and mannerisms. You have to learn how to listen. You have to be coachable to the extent where you can actually make adjustments quick. Because if you don't, you'll be on the bench really quick.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's like playing around. Like, sometimes people don't understand that, what I'm trying to help their child get ready for. So if there's a parent who doesn't really hold their child accountability, then who am I to hold their child accountable? Like, I'm evil now. Now I'm evil. What? You mean you're going to hold my child accountable and I don't even do it? Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I do.
Yes. So, that's why I love working with the athletes who care and who get it, because those are the ones who want to do the extra work and put in the extra reps and stay and have the conversations and Googling things that are going to elevate their game.
That's what it's about.
Well, Rob, I could talk to you for hours, but I know your time is precious because you have all these clinics and all the things. So before you tell people where they can find you and how they can work with you, since you have amassed so much knowledge over the years, if you could give yourself, the listeners, one piece of advice you wish you would have learned earlier. This could be business, love, life, general advice, either something you wish you learned earlier or something that maybe has been omnipresent for you recently that you're just like, chew on this for a little bit. What do you want to leave the listeners with?
I feel like the biggest manifestation of our fears, and I'm winging this right now because I know what I want to say, but I don't know how I'm going to say it. But I believe that the biggest manifestation of our inner fears is when we undervalue ourselves and allow someone else or some other thing to make us think that we're not worthy. It shows up in the people that we accept into our lives. It shows up in taking a small scholarship when you know you're worthy of a bigger one because you're afraid you won't get one. And it manifests in going to the prom with some person that, yeah, you could do better.
Yes. You understand?
Like it comes out in all different ways in which how we look at ourselves. But you know, you always need somebody in your corner, somebody that can speak into your life positively to remind you, if you can't do it yourself, who you really are and how wonderfully made you are, how great you really are. And to be able to tap into that on a daily basis is hard. It's hard work. But I want that for everybody.
I love that. Oh my God. So if people don't have that in their life, they should just sign up for one of your clinics because you bring that positive.
We're doing that in a lot of ways through the sport, definitely.
Absolutely. So on that note then, tell people, because I know you work with people, I believe individually, but you also hold clinics, things like that. So where can people find you? And in the show notes, I will have your Instagram and your website linked and all that. But how can people work with you, find you, learn more about you?
So if you want to get a feel for what it's like, social media is I'm at Complete Game on every channel, Twitter, IG. I think TikTok, I'm Rob_Cruz. Crews. And then obviously I'm on Facebook. And funny, I just started doing social media to the extent that I'm doing it the last, not even a year.
You're crushing it on social media. Your content is so good.
Brianna, I went from 2,000 followers on IG to like 40,000 of them.
I think 43,000 followers. It's impressive.
That happened in like 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
I couldn't even believe it. I was like, okay. Let me just keep going and keep going. So I slowed down a little bit this fall so far, but I'm going to pick it up in the winter and just start going back to posting every day.
Yeah. No, it's a full-time job.
For the listeners, it is. So for the listeners, you can also check out my website, which is www.complete.game. Complete.game. And then something that's new is going to happen is I'm going to be launching a certification program where I'm going to be teaching teachers not just the technical content, but how to actually teach. Because I was taught how to teach. Mm-hmm. I'm not some guy that just said, well, I played, so I'm qualified to do it. I was actually taught how to teach. And I feel like so many certification programs just say, well, here's the information. But that it's deeper than just having the information.
Yes.
You got to know how to connect with people. You got to know how to deliver it. You got to understand learning modalities. There's so many different things that I had to learn to be effective and to be good. That I don't think people understand that it's more than that. You want to develop your teaching gift. And with that certification comes a monthly mentoring program where I mentor teachers and coaches on the effectiveness of communication. And because it's about what you can effectively communicate more so than how much you think you know. Because what you think you know is always changing anyway.
Absolutely. Application goes far.
Absolutely. So that's where I'm at right now in my life.
Oh, I love that. Exciting. Congratulations. Well, Rob, thank you for spending time with me and catching up. We need to have a real time like catch up when you're in the area.
For sure. Definitely.
All right. Thanks. Ciao.
All right. Awesome.